Morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Brad Banas, and I represent the appellants in these consolidated cases. In 1976, Congress amended the Adjustment of Status Statute to require an immigrant visa to be current and available at filing, and filing alone. It's silent on whether it has to be both current and available at approval. But if we look at what was repealed and replaced in the 1960 statute, it's the very policy that the government attempts to defend and apply today. They're trying to defend and apply a 1960s policy that Congress rejected clearly in 1976.
Can I ask you a question about just preliminarily? Does the court have jurisdiction in Singh and Dada?
Your Honor, we believe it does. In the Dada case, it was done in a temporary restraining order, Your Honor. But
was there any hearing?
There was not an oral hearing, Your Honor. But
any hearing, none?
There was not a hearing, Your Honor. There was no factual disputes. There was no need for a hearing, Your Honor. It was a purely legal question that the judge decided on the briefs. I filed an opening brief. They filed a response, and under the rules of the Western District of Washington, I wasn't allowed to do a reply, Your Honor. The court took 3 weeks and wrote a decision. So I do believe that it was a full product of the adversarial process.
Let's assume that the TROs are not appealable. You do have one appealable order here, right?
That's right, Your Honor. The Barbaria case, and the government concedes that, Your Honor. And I would say the Barbaria case, if this court doesn't exercise jurisdiction over the Dada and the Singh appeals, that will control the outcome of those two.
The one that we do have jurisdiction over involves precisely the same issues as the others.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, so let me turn. I'm not clear how you think the system would work under your brave new world. So let's assume somebody applies, and on the day they apply, a visa is available. You concede that USCIS still has to look at the application and decide whether or not to approve it, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
On the day they approve it, no visa is available. What are they supposed to do under your reading of the statute?
Your Honor, we don't think they can approve it if there's no visa available.
Then we're in this situation where an applicant must then file a brand new application because they will have to turn it down because no visa is available. Instead, they've come up with a system that says, if no visa is available on the day that we get to approve your thing, we'll keep you in the queue, and when a visa becomes available, we'll approve it. So I'm trying to figure out why applicants are better off under your system than the system the USCIS has.
Your Honor, first, it's the system that Congress created.
Okay, that wasn't the question I asked you. I'm not sure it's the system Congress created, but that's a separate issue. Tell me why. I mean, it seems to me that if your clients, on the day that USCIS got around more quickly to reviewing their application, were in a situation where no visa were available, USCIS would have to say denied. Right now, they don't say denied. They said, we won't take up your application until we know on the day we approve it, we can give you a visa. I'm trying to figure out how that disadvantages anybody in your client's situation.
Yes, Your Honor. It's the unpredictability, uncertainty, and indeterminate delays that impact my clients. You asked me how I think the system works. This is how I think it works. The State Department, in its infinite wisdom, has to identify how many visas are available in a fiscal year, and then it has to dole them out in compliance with the country caps, the quarterly productivity caps, as well as stopping country caps at certain points.
But right now, it does so, assuming all the applications are valid and should be approved, it does so on the basis of an order of the applications. What you're saying is it shouldn't do that. It doesn't matter when you apply. We should just look at it on the day we approve your application. And if we don't have a visa on the day we approve your application, tough luck. Go back and apply again and see if you win the lottery the second time. It strikes me the system that they have is infinitely fairer than the one you propose.
Your Honor, I think that we have to be very careful with our language here. You keep using the word available. Your Honor, the government doesn't dispute there's visas available today. The question is whether they're current. And our proposal is to judge whether they are current and available, that is, prior to the priority date that the Department of State sets out at filing. And once they are filed, regardless of the fluctuation of the priority date under the visa bulletin, that there, as long as there is a visa available, that they would get a decision.
So let's assume that on the day that you file, a visa is available. 300 other people have previously filed for that visa, and it was also available on that day. But there's only one or two available. Who gets it?
Your Honor, one or two of them. Because if that's the situation...
And one or two of them on the, presumably, on the order of who filed first.
Hopefully.
That's exactly the system they have now. They just don't tell you until the day the visa becomes available, right?
Your Honor, I disagree. That is not the system
we have.
People
are still staying in the queue, in the order priority, right? That doesn't shift.
Your
Honor, it's just a question of how you determine the availability. So let me take up your statutory argument for a moment, because you rely very much on the fact that the statute is silent as to the availability on at the time of adjudication. Did I understand that correctly?
I rely on whether it's current at the time of adjudication, not available.
I'm talking about your statutory argument, your
correct.
Statutory-based argument. Tell me what that is.
The statute is silent on whether you are required to have a visa current at approval,
current
not available.
At the time of adjudication.
Correct, Your Honor.
So you're relying on the silence in the statutory language to infer that Congress prohibited the government's current system, right?
No, Your Honor.
Tell me what your argument is.
That when the text of the statute is silent, then we use the traditional tools of statutory construction to determine what Congress's intent was, and we enforce that intent. The intent here, through the structure and the history, couldn't be more clear. That silence is not an accident. That silence is a policy choice they made in 1976 when the House wrote a report that said, let me just quote it exactly right, that the amendment designates the date used in determining the availability of a visa number as the date the application is filed rather than the approval date. In 1952, Congress, with the Adjustment of Status statute, required it to be current and available, again, two different concepts at both filing and approval. That didn't work. In 1960, they said we have to be current and available at approval. That apparently didn't work. So in 1976, they rejected that, repealed and replaced it, and said it has to be current and approvable at filing and filing alone.
Wasn't the previous system, I read the previous statute to say, we won't put you in the queue until we approve your application. And that's why it said the secretary can give a visa, the last clause, if a visa was available and approved. And so what happened under the old system, I believe, I may be wrong about this, is that you got put in the queue when your application was approved. The change in the system was to put you in the queue when your application was filed. And that's why the language came out. Am I wrong about that?
You are, Your Honor. The system hasn't changed. The agency's policy has maintained the same thing.
When I look at the statute, it seems to give the agency broad discretion to adjudicate the process. And so, yes, it's a convoluted system, and I don't know which way works better. So long as the person maintains their priority in the queue, there's fairness in the system, right? Because we're talking about a limited number of visas issued. When they run out, they run out. Right. So if one person gets it, the other one gets back in the line. So it seems to me that Congress in the statute intended to give the government the discretion to come up with a system that's fair.
I agree, Your Honor. They have discretion on how to figure out how to actually adjudicate these and do this. But they cannot use that discretion to violate congressional intent. And that's what they're doing here. And let's just be clear. In the last 10 fiscal years...
Congressional intent on its face is to give the government the discretion.
I disagree, Your Honor. If the structure of the statute indicates that Congress assumed that there would be, if USCIS said, I approve this adjustment of status application, that if there were visas available under the country caps, that it would be done. And they did not give the Department of State discretion at all to say no to that. They have to allocate. They shall reduce by one the number of preference visas if they're available under the country caps.
Again, take me back. I'm still not sure how this works. Let me construct a hypothetical world for you. There are 300 visas available to residents of Kazakhstan. 700 people apply on the same day. There are visas available to everyone on that day when they apply, correct?
In your hypothetical, yes.
Okay, only 300 are available. The agency can't, you don't expect the agency to adjudicate all the applications on day one,
I don't, Your Honor. They're not allowed.
It takes some time to adjudicate the applications. And by the time it adjudicates the applications, it's the next year, and some of them are no longer available. What do we do with all the people that applied for whom visas are no longer available?
You're on that hypothetical doesn't accurately describe the system.
Okay.
If there's 700...
That's why it's a hypothetical. So tell me why under that... Because it describes a variant of the system. In the system, we know it takes a while to approve applications, and by the time applications are approved, a visa that was available on the day of application is no longer available because it's gone to somebody further up in the queue. So tell me what the agency is supposed to do under that circumstance.
Under that circumstance, when the fiscal year rolls over and more visas are available because every October 1st, a new batch of visas becomes available, then those folks can get adjustment of status and get approved.
So they should get adjustment of status under your view of the world, even though there is not a visa currently available to them. Just because there was one available on the day they applied, but not on the day they were approved.
Under your hypothetical, yes, Your Honor. But
well,
again,
under your reconstruction, that's true too, isn't it?
No.
So what happens under your reconstruction is if on the day of approval there's no longer a visa available, the agency says to the applicant, your application is denied because there is no visa available.
That's in the discretion of the agency. They can choose to deny it or they can choose to keep it open. Right now their policy is to keep it open. Under my system, here's how it works. And I should say, under Congress's system, here's how it works. The Department of State decides a priority date. The priority date dictates what application dates are both current and available. That dictates when USCIS will accept an adjustment of status application. When it accepts it, it knows that there is a visa available and there is a visa current. It goes through the process.
So then under my hypothetical, what it should do is if 300 people apply on the same day and there's only 100 visas available, say to the second 200, I cannot accept your application.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. The gatekeeping occurs at the outset, not at the back end.
What do we do with people already in the queue who have been waiting for their approval date? What's the transition from the old system into your system?
Your Honor, I think that's up to the agency. This court should not interfere and get into the minutiae of the agency's processes. But what this court should do is...
Well, if we adopt your view, those people... Your people, the people under your system will get approved on the day they file their application, will be entitled to a visa on the day they apply.
No.
And the people from before who may have been entitled but have had to wait for several years for their applications to be approved will have to go to the back of the line, won't they?
No, Your Honor.
Well, they can't give out more visas than Congress authorizes.
I agree.
I still don't understand how your system works. Let me take you back to Judge Ilston's understanding of your interpretation. She said that your interpretation would lead to an absurd result because it would result in a mismatch between the number of visas available and the number of visas issued because a visa's availability would be committed at the time of application but reduced at the time of approval. Did she characterize your system correctly?
No, Your Honor. Her characterization violates 8 U.S.C. 1255B. 1255B.
And I still don't understand what happens to the people who apply, but for which there are no longer visas available.
Your Honor, that's not the situation here, first off. And second off, that's an incredibly rare situation. In the last 10 fiscal years, USCIS and Department of State have run out of visas one time. That was last year. And they ran out 20 days before the end of the fiscal year. And if that happens every year, great, because that is a much preferable alternative to my clients than wasting 60,000, 40,000, 20,000 visas a year, which increases their time in this queue. By following the congressional pattern, we see this symbiotic interagency process where Department of State tells just like they do at their consulates, when they put out the priority date, that's when you can go to the consulate and apply for your visa. They tell USCIS, here's the priority date. That's when folks in the U.S. can use this exception to the rule, this mechanism of adjustment of status, to apply. Yes, will this mean that USCIS has to restrict who can apply for adjustment of status more than it does today? I think so, Your Honor. Again, that's not what we're asking for. That's up to them. They can do whatever they want. We do not want to interfere with that.
So what? And I know you're running out of time, but I'm sure Judge Wynn will give you another minute or two.
Thank you.
Isn't your real complaint in this case that they don't adjudicate the applications quickly enough?
No, Your Honor, not at this point.
Well, would you have? I know, but would you? For example, if they adjudicated the applications 2 days after they came in, would you have any complaint?
I would not have a job, Your Honor. That's right. If there were no delays in the system would work as it's designed.
Well, but if they did that, you would still have the same problem, would you not? Unless they said even if it was 2 days later or a month later, there still may not be sufficient visas available to give to the people whose applications were approved.
Your Honor, I think that our disagreement is that the issue here is not whether visas are available. It's whether they're current. The agency concedes visas are available today.
Currently available.
No, Your Honor. Two different concepts. Current meaning in the language of the statute 1255 A3, immediately available. Immediately available means that it's a priority date prior to the earliest priority date on the visa bulletin. I use the word current rather than trying to distinguish between available and immediately available. Available means there is cereal on the shelves in the grocery store, okay? Current means you get to go grab one, right? Because you've been let into the store, so to speak. But right now, there are 98,000 visas by definition coming April 1st because under the productivity caps, they cannot decide more than 27% in any fiscal quarter.
You can't grab one off the shelf until you're approved, correct?
That's correct. USCIS, under this court's precedent in Hernandez, it says USCIS triggers the allocation of the visa to the Department of State. They trigger it. Department of State has a mandatory duty to reduce the number anytime USCIS says you're approved. Okay? And today, if this court, for some reason, ordered the agency, this is not what we asked for, but to adjudicate every single one of my clients' applications today, there are sufficient visa numbers under the country caps, under the productivity caps and everything for them to get one today. They're not current.
It seems to me your real complaint is they take too long to adjudicate.
No, Your Honor. Not in this case. In other cases, yes. In this case, they have stopped. They have taken the files and they put them in cold storage. They have sent them somewhere to the Midwest in a warehouse that will take months and years to get them back out once the visa bulletin goes forward. And keep in mind, April 1st, the visa bulletin goes back another year to January 1, 2011. The volatility of the visa bulletin is the problem here. It forces my clients to wait not 1 year, not 2 years, but 15 years to get a decision on their adjustment of status application. Congress did not intend adjustment of status applications to be pending for 15 years.
Okay, counsel, you're over time.
Thank
I'll give you a couple of minutes to come back on rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Alessandra Faso, and I represent the government in this matter. Before this court is a request by the applicants for an emergency judicial order that would essentially overhaul the system by which U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services and the Department of State approve green card applications and allocate those visas. The district courts in these cases did not abuse their discretion in denying those emergency motions for relief. I'd like to begin my argument by addressing one of counsel's points with respect to the fact that there are visas that are available today. What counsel does not explain to this court is the reality that visas are not available today to his clients based on their priority dates. Their priority dates were assigned to them when they applied for the immigrant visa petition that placed them in a queue, as your honors have acknowledged, wherein they receive interim benefits and can enjoy those benefits by virtue of having a pending adjustment of status application.
Let me interrupt you there so I understand this correctly. Let's assume that their applications had been approved sometime prior to this. Would a visa have been available to them?
Yes, Your Honor. If the application for adjustment of status was approved, that would necessarily mean that a visa was immediately available to that individual.
And as I understand the system, you wait to initiate approval until a visa is available to that applicant.
Yes.
So the bottom line is, by adjudicating their claims today or this week, and give them one of the visas that are currently available, that would basically knock somebody else out of the queue.
Exactly, Your Honor. The applicants are asking...
Somebody else who was in front of them out of the queue.
Yes. So the applicants are asking to be placed in front of a number of other applicants who have likely been waiting longer than them. So if USCIS were to jumble up the queue and accelerate these individuals' applications, that would be putting somebody else at a disadvantage that might end up in district court for the same reason. So it's a fundamental fairness issue that the applicants are asking this court to accelerate their applications. At the bottom of this claim is, and why it fails from an emergency injunctive relief perspective, is there's no immediate irreparable harm here. And the district courts acknowledge that in each of the three cases.
Well, so let me ask, they're allowed to stay here. They have certain benefits.
Yes.
Do they have all the benefits of being an LPR?
No, Your Honor. They do not have all the benefits of being an LPR, but obtaining a green card is an enormous benefit, and it allows for freedom of travel without restriction, the ability to work in any job in the U.S., the ability to accrue presence in order to become a U.S. citizen, which, as this court knows, is an enormous benefit. However, the magnitude of the benefit here unfortunately comes with a waiting period, and the visa availability and the country caps with respect to the percentage of individuals from certain countries that need to wait longer than others unfortunately goes into that process. And while the applicants don't necessarily get all the benefits of being a green card holder, they do get certain benefits by virtue of having those pending applications.
So let me take you back to the previous statute from which two words were removed, or maybe three. How did it work under the previous statute? The same way, or was it a different system?
Prior to the amendment?
Yes.
To my knowledge, it worked that the delays and the backlogs were not such that the visa bulletin needed to be broken up into those two sections.
But under the old system, the government was reasonably confident that on the day it got around to approving the application, a visa would be available. Was there a priority system?
That's my understanding, Your Honor.
That's my understanding, too, but I'm not sure I can tell it from this record of the statute itself.
Yes, and the priority date system has been in place for a while, and it's the best way to ensure fairness among applicants, and there's a lot that goes into the priority date.
Let me ask one other factual question. For the visas that these petitioners are seeking, I take it, and I don't think this is contested, but I want to make sure I understand it, that there are visas that could be issued today, but there are people with higher priority to those visas. Is that a fair way to summarize it?
That's correct, Your Honor. Those
higher priority because they applied, because someone applied earlier. So
right.
It may have been their employer.
They applied earlier, or they're in a different visa preference category that is essentially up for approval.
Okay, does the government process the visas in the order in which their applications are received? Process the applications in the order in which they're received?
Generally, the government does process these applications on a modified first-in, first-out basis. There are a lot of factors that go into the adjudication of adjustment of status applications. But as a general matter, the government does try to prioritize older applications that have been pending for a longer period of time.
Yeah, and I understand that's not the contention in this case, but it's the necessary consequence of adopting the petitioner's position that we would have a FIFO system with respect to the date of application, right?
In theory, yes, Your Honor. However, I am also slightly unclear as to how the applicant's system would necessarily play out in practice. But at the end of the day, the system that the USCIS and the Department of State have in place, while it's not perfect, does its best to ensure fairness while also ensuring that the government is following the law. And with respect to each of the INA provisions with respect to per country caps, quarterly caps, and the yearly availability of visas.
Counsel, let me ask you this. I mean, the 10-plus year wait seems startling. To what extent is the speed of processing play into that delay, or is it just solely a question of availability of visas?
Your Honor, the speed with respect or with which the government adjudicates adjustment of status applications certainly can play into the availability of visas and the length of time that individuals are waiting. But I will note that what counsel noted earlier is that last year the government exhausted all of the visas available. Like he said, about, you know, several days before the end of the fiscal year. So while the pace at which the government adjudicates these applications certainly plays a role, at the end of the day, there's a finite number of visas that are going to be available each year to individuals from certain countries and in certain...
So what you're saying to me, as I understand it, is that the speed of processing is an issue, but at least it's fast enough so that there's not these... a bunch of wasted visas that have spilled over into other categories or reallocated into other categories at the end of the fiscal year?
Exactly.
So go back. I want to go back to the statutory argument. Counsel's argument, I think, is that the old system, the old statute described a system, and that the new statute describes a different system, and that the manual is may be consistent with the old statute, but not with the new statute. I'm not sure I phrased it correctly, but I think I did. Respond to that for me.
Just so I understand your question, Your Honor, is it
sure,
whether...
the old statute said the application may be approved, a visa may be issued if 1, 2, and 3. And just focus on 3. 3 said a visa was available on the date of application and approval.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've just changed it to the date of application in the new statute. And so I want to figure out whether or not the manual is it seems the manual is consistent with the new statute.
It is consistent with the new statute, Your Honor. What counsel fails to reconcile is how 8 U.S.C. 1255B plays into this. And that provision mandates the Secretary of State to reduce by 1 the number of the preference visas that are authorized to be issued in that preference category where the individual applied for the fiscal year then current.
Reduce it by 1 when what occurs?
When an application is approved.
See, and that's sort of what I'm trying to get back to. The other statute said you give them the visa when it's approved.
Right.
It didn't say. It said you're eligible to get a visa if there's one available on the date of application and approval. This one says you're eligible to get one if there's one available on the date of application. But what you're saying is that the other statute requires the secretary to reduce the number on approval.
Correct.
Okay, so how does that make the manual consistent with the statute?
It makes the manual consistent with the statute in that it directs the Department of State and USCIS to work within the limits that Congress prescribed. And so by reducing the visa numbers on the date of approval, the Department of State is ensuring, and in USCIS, by approving that application, triggering the Department of State to reduce that number of the visas available, it's ensuring that these agencies are working together to not exceed any of those limitations that Congress provided.
I understand the statute
doesn't
allow the secretary to reduce the number of visas available simply because a good application was filed. Did it before?
Not necessarily, Your Honor.
In other words, under the previous existence of the statute, what did the Secretary do when an application was received? Did it put one on the shelf for that applicant, or did it wait until approval to decide whether or not there was one available?
To my understanding, Your Honor, the Department of State would reduce the number of the visas available once that application was approved as well.
Well, only when it was approved.
Correct.
Not when it was submitted.
Correct. And I think that we were operating...
Well, that's why I asked counsel whether there's been any real change in the system in terms of allocation of visas.
Right. Not to my knowledge. And years ago, when the statutory amendments were made, we were operating in a different landscape. I mean, the amount of people that are requesting green cards today has increased exponentially. And so these safeguards in the system, Department of State's use of the Visa Bulletin, USCIS's use of the Visa Bulletin and abiding by the country and the fiscal year caps is all a product of the amount of applicants that are asking for green cards and essentially shifting their focus on fairness and ensuring that the agencies are abiding by the congressional limits. At the end of the day, Your Honors, the applicants have not demonstrated that their position is likely to succeed on the merits. I will remind this court, we're at the emergency preliminary injunction TRO stage. The applicants are asking for a mandatory injunction, meaning they're asking for the government to actively do something. They're not trying to maintain the status quo, and that is the purpose of a preliminary injunction. They're asking this court to direct USCIS and the Department of State to issue visas to individuals when their priority dates are not current and a visa is not immediately available to them. They have not met their burden in demonstrating that the facts and the law clearly favor their position. The district courts did not err in ultimately concluding that the applicants were not likely to succeed on the merits and that they did not have an immediate threat of irreparable harm in these cases. If there are no further questions from the court, the government would respectfully request that this court affirm the district court's decisions denying preliminary injunctive relief in each of these cases.
Thank you, counsel.
It would be helpful to me, in rebuttal, if you could direct some response to the irreparable harm issue.
Your Honor, my clients have missed funerals. They've missed birthdays. In their culture and religious ceremonies, they're to return home on the one-year anniversary of the death of a parent. They can't do that. These interim benefits are a far cry from the abilities and rights and obligations you have as a permanent resident. Include the delays and the idea of advanced parole, which is travel authorizations, an application that takes 14 to 18 months to get a decision, and you can only apply 6 months early, and they're for good for 1 year. If you do that math, you don't get it. In addition, most of my clients have maintained non-immigrant status, and so they have two statuses they're balancing, and perhaps their employer wants them on an H-1B, and if they reenter on advanced parole, they'll lose their job because they have different rights and obligations under the contracts that they're serving to federal agencies. And so I don't know how you go to your father's funeral when you miss it because you can't travel because you're not a green card holder. That's the nature of the irreparable harm, not to mention career advancement and the lack of the right to have these rights and duties of a permanent resident. And that's our irreparable harm, Your Honor. Further, the indeterminate amount of time they're going to take to get a green card, the uncertainty there. Their children can't get in-state tuition. Their children can't get positions, internships with federal agencies because, again, you have to be a green card holder or a citizen, not a non-immigrant or not someone who is just waiting for a green card. So we think that's sufficient for irreparable harm as a legal matter, which is why you don't see a lot of affidavits showing factual stories. But I can tell you we have folks whose one spouse was granted, one spouse was not. And so the spouse who was a derivative of the spouse that was granted lost their status. And they're having to go through another process that just retrogressed. I hope that answers your question, Your Honor. I see I'm out of time again. If I may just address one thing, Your Honors.
You can wrap it up, please.
I will. Your Honors, this is a disagreement. The agency did not change their policy in 1976. They have not changed it in the last 47 years. And Congress made a discrete policy choice. We see in the record very clear. If Congress told them, you need to go outside and walk a duck, and it was very clear on the record, and they said, nope, we've been walking a dog for years, we're going to keep walking that dog, this court's role in our constitutional system is to tell them, you better walk that duck. And for those reasons, Your Honor, this court should vacate the lower court decisions and enjoin these policies. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, counsel for both sides, for your very helpful arguments today. That concludes today's argument calendar, so we are in recess until tomorrow morning. Thank you.